Rudolf Verbaugh. It appears that the next event involved Reitlinger. The anonymity of the authors of the WRB report is a striking and disturbing feature of the first edition of Reitlinger's book, as I am sure he realized. This no doubt bothered him, for it appears that he set out to locate the authors of the report, for he writes in his second edition, published in 1968, that Rudolf Verbaugh, the author of the quote-unquote most important part of the WRB report, meaning the first section, was, quote, in hospital practice in Cardiff in 1960, unquote. Reitlinger's contact with Verbaugh in 1960, thus, would appear to be the first appearance of an alleged author of the report in any sort of historical record. Verbaugh was apparently produced as a consequence of Reitlinger's investigations. The town of Cardiff in South Wales is incidentally only about 150 miles from Reitlinger's home in Sussex. Reitlinger does not mention the name of any of the other authors. He considers a stencil book by Zilberstein, Reitlinger's World Jewish Congress colleague in Switzerland, as including the quote-unquote complete version of the report. Both authors of the first two sections of the WRB report, the first two young Slovakian Jews, acquired identities at Eichmann's trial in 1961. Two witnesses testified regarding the report, and it was offered in evidence with the explanation that the first two young Slovakian Jews were Alfred Wetzler and Rudolf Verbaugh, ex-Rosenberg or Rosenthal, then resident in England. The document was rejected on the grounds that certain contradictions in the figures offered required further explanation. Therefore, late in the trial, the prosecution produced an affidavit by Verbaugh. The affidavit explains how Verbaugh arrived at the impressively detailed figures regarding the transports to Auschwitz, which are the main feature of the WRB report. His affidavit gives the impression that, while he got assistance from various people, he was solely responsible for drawing up the figures, and he does not give the name of, or even mention his companion, who allegedly escaped with him in April 1944. He mentions a Philippe Mulla, who helped him somewhat with his figures, because Mulla, quote, is apparently the only survivor alive at present, unquote. Verbaugh's affidavit was rejected by the court on the grounds that there was no excuse for the prosecution not bringing him to Jerusalem to testify. Verbaugh appeared again at the Auschwitz trial in Frankfurt in 1964. His book, I Cannot Forgive, with Alan Bestick, also appeared in 1964, shortly before his Frankfurt appearance. Verbaugh's companion in his supposed escape appeared too. Alfred Wetzler was said to have been the other young Slovakian Jew. Wetzler was, in 1964, a 46-year-old civil servant in Czechoslovakia, who had arrived at Auschwitz on April 13, 1942, and been given registration number 29162. He had been a block registrar at Birkenau. Verbaugh was identified as a 40-year-old biochemist living in England, who had arrived at Auschwitz on June 30, 1942, and been given registration number 44070. He had also been a block registrar at Birkenau. They had, they said, escaped on April 7, 1944, and made their way to Bratislava, Czechoslovakia, where they made their report to the Jewish elders and also to the papal nuncio. The report was smuggled to Budapest by Rabbi Weissmandel. The 1964 story differs, therefore, from that which was told to the authors of the IMT staff evidence analysis in 1945. The most serious apparent contradiction, however, is in the credit for the reporting of the figures related to the transports to Auschwitz. Verbaugh, in his 1961 affidavit, which did not mention Wetzler, and also in his Frankfurt testimony, presented himself as being primarily responsible for the figures. The WRB report, on the other hand, while it attributes the figures to both men, present the figures in the first section of the report, whose author is supposed to be Wetzler. Verbaugh does not explain, in his 1964 book, why he waited 16 years to talk about his escape from Auschwitz, and his delivery of the statistics that were eventually published by Washington. His book follows roughly the story of the WRB report, with a few contradictions of varying degrees of importance. For example, in the book, page 128, Verbaugh writes that the girls working in the Canada area were in very good health, but in the WRB report, part 1, page 31, these women were, quote, beaten and brutalized, and their mortality was much higher than among the men, unquote. Other oddities in his book are his claim to have helped build the crematories, page 16, not mentioned in the WRB report, and his description of an Allied air raid on April 9, 1944, of which there is no record, page 233, he says that he and Wetzler hid in a woodpile for 3 days at Auschwitz after their April 7 escape. The possibility of an Allied air raid in April is discussed below on page 203. Wetzler just barely manages to get mentioned in Verbaugh's book. Verbaugh says nothing about the Polish major or the two Jews, who supposedly escaped later on to supplement the Auschwitz transport figures. In the book, the other prisoners refer to him as Rudy, although his original name, and the name by which he was supposedly known at Auschwitz, is supposed to have been Walter Rosenberg, a point Verbaugh's book does not bring up but is claimed elsewhere, for example in They Fought Back, edited by Yuri Sewell, and in Fighting Auschwitz by Josef Garlinski. Verbaugh says nothing about resting in a mountain retreat after escaping. Just as conclusive, in our evaluation of Verbaugh's story, as the various contradictions of either the WRB report or known fact, is the general tone of the book, and his description of how various people behaved at the camp. Although the book presents utterly incredible material in this connection from beginning to end, the best example is Verbaugh's description of an alleged visit by Himmler on July 17, 1942, pages 9-15, not mentioned in the WRB report. The prisoners were drawn up for inspection, and the orchestra was in readiness to play when Himmler arrived. As they waited, the leader of the orchestra, quote, stood, baton raised, motionless, poised to weave music for the honored guest. And then it happened. The catastrophe that every actor dreads. The moment of horror that only great occasions merit. The crisis that seems to dog every moment of truth. In the 10th row outside our block, the block senior found Yankel Meisel without his full quota of tunic buttons. It took some seconds for the enormity of the crime to sink in. Then he felled him with a blow. Out of sight, they beat and kicked the life out of him. Himmler's suite was 20 yards away. The baton moved, and the orchestra followed with an excerpt from Aida. It was the triumph march. He lined us up and rapped, I am the Reichsfuhrer. Let's see how you behave in front of me. Slowly, he marched down the ranks, a little killer aping a big killer, glaring at each of us in turn. If he found dirty fingernails or wooden shoes not properly blacked, he howled abuse at the offender, and thumped him with his heavy bamboo cane. He even inspected us, nursery fashion, behind the ears, and then went prowling through the barracks, searching for blankets which had not been folded with precision. Unquote. Verbaugh mentions a second Himmler visit, pages 15-19. The visit seems to correspond to the March 1943 visit of dignitaries from Berlin, in January 1943 to witness the gassing of 3,000 Polish Jews. The event was scheduled for 9 a.m., but Himmler took until 11 a.m. to finish breakfast, so the 3,000 Jews had to wait 2 hours in the gas chamber. Himmler finally witnessed the gassing in a cheerful and relaxed mood, chatting with the commandant and others, occasionally throwing a glance through the peephole to observe the Jews being gassed. The book manages to maintain this utterly incredible tone throughout, as you can verify by reading it, if you can stand it. Reitlinger does not cite Verbaugh's book in any connection in the second edition of his book. He still writes of Verbaugh as the author of the quote-unquote most important part of the WRB report, the first section, although the data offered shows that this role should be attributed to Wetzler. It does not appear important or relevant to Reitlinger that Verbaugh was only 18 years old when, as he claims, he started collecting the numerical and other data concerning the transports to Auschwitz, with the intention of making this information available to the outside world. There has been no claimed break, so far as I know, in the anonymity of the Polish major. In an article in Sewell's book, Eric Kulka of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem offers names for the two authors of the supplementary section, Czesław Mordowicz, who changed his name to Peter Podielka, and Arnoszt Rosen, who changed his name to Jan Rohach, but I know nothing of these people, other than that they remained quiet about their heroic exploits for an even greater number of years, than Verbaugh and Wetzler did. Moreover, neither Elias, nor Suze, nor Verbaugh, as Verbaugh or as Rosenberg, nor Weissmandl appeared as witnesses in any of the Nuremberg trials, despite the sometimes contested role played by Document 011L at those trials. The records of the International Tracing Service in Arolsen, West Germany, report that two Jews named Wetzler and Rosenberg did escape on April 7, 1944, and this agrees with the calendarium published by the Polish government in 1964 as number 7 of Hefte von Auschwitz, which also declares that two Jews named Mordowicz and Rosen escaped on May 27, 1944. Because there were many successful escapes from Auschwitz during this period, many more than Verbaugh seems to think there were, compare page 217 of Verbaugh with Garlinski's remarks about escapes, this data may well be correct, but it still does not authenticate the authorship of the WRB report, especially because we are told today that after escaping, the four Jews adopted aliases for concealment purposes, and that three of the four retained these different names after the war rather than reassume their real names. The details behind the manufacture of the WRB report will probably never be completely uncovered, but it is entirely possible that its creators went to great lengths in simulating a report miraculously smuggled to Slovakia and then to Switzerland. If it was written in Slovakia, then it seems clear that Rabbi Weissmandl should be credited with at least co-authorship. It is also possible that, as claimed, the report was given to the papal charge d'affaires in Slovakia, Giuseppe Berzio, and that it was forwarded by him to Rome. It is clear that Bertzio was contacted by Jewish propagandists, and that he forwarded at least some of their quote-unquote information to Rome. Examples that Bertzio transmitted to the Vatican were March 22 claims that the Germans were taking young Jewish women from their families to make them prostitutes for German soldiers on the Eastern Front, a complete fantasy, and an early 1943 letter from a Bratislava priest claiming that both Jewish and responsible German sources had told him of soap factories supplied with the bodies of gassed and machine gun Jews. Whether Bertzio forwarded such material purely as routine procedure or because he gave credence to it is hardly relevant, although the latter appears to be the case. The Vatican received and filed many such reports during the war, but never gave any credence to them. Its present position is that, during the war, neither it, nor the, quote, Jewish agencies were aware that the deportations were part of a general mass annihilation operation, unquote, see also Appendix E. In any case, it is obvious that the WRB report is spurious. The data given in the report is not the sort of information that escapees would carry out. The claim that two more Jews escaped later on to supplement this data is more than doubly ridiculous. Instead of coming forward immediately after the war with ostensible authors of the report, in order to lend more support to the lie, it appears that it was assumed that the whole thing was irrelevant until, for some reason, probably Reitlinger's curiosity, an author was produced 16 years after the event. That person's story is not credible. Thus was born the Auschwitz legend.